Okay, so...
Just remind me, what was the guy in chapter 11? Yerovam ben Nevat?
Yeah, so Perek Yud Aleph...
He was crowned the king. No.
So, not yet. He is going to be king. He was... He had the Nevuah. He was told by the Navi that he was going to be king, but now we're going to get the story of how he becomes king. Right, that was the prophecy in advance. But he actually becomes king in Perek Yud Bet. So in Perek Yud Bet, you get the description of the Piluga Melucha, or of the division of the kingdom. So Shlomo's son, Rechavam, tries to take over the reins of the whole kingdom, and we get the description of his failure to take over his father's reign, and how the majority of the Jews end up following Yeravam. That starts in Perek Yud Bet. So Vayelech Rechavam Shechem ki Shechem ba kol Yisrael lam lichoto. So Rechavam goes to Shechem, he wants to be inaugurated as king in Shechem. Now, it's not totally clear why he goes to Shechem. Shechem was traditionally the quasi-capital city of Ephraim, which is the Shevet of Yeravam. So it's possible, so many of the Mepharshim assume, that Rechavam knew about the prophecy to Yeravam that he was supposed to be king. So in order to solidify his monarchy, he, instead of having a coronation in Yerushalayim, he goes to Shechem.
It doesn't make any sense if the Navi told Yeravam that he's going to be king. Rechavam thought he's going to go on his own and be king.
So it's not totally clear. As we'll see, once he gets a nevuah, a direct nevuah, that he should stop, that he's not supposed to be king, he backs off. So it's not clear. It may be that he had heard something, he didn't know exactly what was going on. But so some of the Mepharshim see here that indication that at least there was some rumor of the nevuah, some rumor that Yeravam was trying to take over. So he goes to Shechem. Possibly it's even worse than that, right? Possibly the Jews don't even want to come to Yerushalayim at all. It's not just he's going to solidify power, but power is starting to go to Yeravam, and therefore he has to go into the sort of enemy territory to try to persuade them. It's not totally clear why he goes, but he ends up going to Har Ephraim, to Shechem. So Yeravam hears about this. He had fled, the Pesukim remind us, he'd fled to Mitzrayim when from Shlomo. I mean, he'd been living in Mitzrayim. So he comes as the populist leader, essentially. He comes back from Mitzrayim to this coronation to negotiate on behalf of the Jewish people. And he is the spokesman, the leader of this populist rebellion, or not yet rebellion, but almost rebellion. So they say to Rechavam, Avicha hiksha et uleinu. Vata ata akel mevodat avicha akasha meolo akaveda shenatan aleinu vina avdeka. So they say to Rechavam, your father had put a tremendous burden on us, the taxes, the required work. So now we want you to lighten the load, and then we'll think about serving you. And then we will serve you. It's not clear, but then at least we'll talk to you. Now, a lot of the Mepharshim try to figure out what's going on here. So, you know, one possibility is that really during the life of Shlomo, they were sort of okay with this heavy taxation because there was prosperity and there was peace, and Shlomo had tremendous power, so no one complained. But as we saw at the end of Shlomo's life, there started to be military struggles, and there started to be little skirmishes with enemies. Now, once your tax money isn't accomplishing what it needs to, so then you complain about the taxes. Other Mepharshim just point out, no, they were just forgetting how good things were, right? Meaning people, as good as things are, they begrudge taxes. Now, maybe they won't say anything to Shlomo because he was too powerful, but it doesn't matter how good things are. People begrudge taxation. And if there are high taxes, especially when the king is living a lavish lifestyle, so they really just, they don't care that things are good. They don't care that there was peace. They don't care there's prosperity. They just don't want the high taxation. The Malbim has a very, very fascinating analysis of this whole thing, and he suggests that there are two models of kingdoms. There are kings who rule by sheer power, and don't need people to agree to what they're doing, and then there are kings who need to rule by popular consent. And what the people are saying to Rehavam is, look, your father, because he was brilliant, because he was powerful, because he had all these alliances, the foreign powers, because of everything he was, we couldn't complain to him. He was that type of king. He just ruled by brute force, and it wasn't worth complaining. But you're not king yet. And if you want to be king, you have to be king through consent. Because, you know, you haven't yet taken power, and you're not your father. You won't be able to beat us into contrition. And therefore, it's time for you to give in a little bit to our demands. And then if you give in to our demands, so then we'll serve you. So Vayomer Alehem, so Rechavim says in the Chu Od Shlosha Yamim, Veshuva Elai VeElchu Ha'am. So he said, go away for 3 days and let me think about it and I'll come back to you. Now the Abarbanel writes that this was his first mistake. Right? If you have a rebellion fomenting, don't give them 3 days to rally up support. If they ask you something. Say anything. It doesn't matter what you say. Just say something. But instead, he said, let me come back to you, which means that people are a little bit upset. They're not sure what you're going to say. It gives them time to talk about you behind your back. So this is what, you know, gave the momentum to the movement that will eventually topple Rehavam. But that's mistake one. Then, mistake two. So he asks two sets of advisors what he should do. He asks the elders, who were his father's advisors, and the established politicians, and then he asked his friends, the people who are his age. Vayvatz HaMelech Rehavam Eraz Geinim Asher Ayu Omdim Et Pnei Shlomo Aviv Biyoto Chai Lemor. Eich Atem Noatzim LaShiv Et HaAm Hazeh Davar. So he asked the elders, who were his father's advisors, what do you suggest I respond to them? Now, one way of reading this is that he asked them, should I lower taxes or not? But many of the Mefarshim are medayek that he actually never says that. He doesn't say, should I lower taxes or not? He says, how should I respond? Meaning, Dab Mikra thinks this, and some of the classical Mefarshim think this as well, that he had no intention of lowering taxes. His only question was, how do I present it nicely so that they'll deal with the fact that I'm not lowering taxes? And then they respond to him, Vayidabru elav lemor, hayoma tihye eved l'am hazev avadam vinitem, vanitem vidibart alehem dvarim tovim, vayulacha avadim kol yamim. And they respond to him. So now, it's not clear what they respond. So either they respond, be nice, or they respond, no, listen to them. Right? Meaning they're introducing something he didn't even think about. He thought that, look, I'll just be nice, but I won't lower taxes. And they said, no, no, no. If you want them to listen to you, you actually have to give in. And what they say to him is, if today you are their servant, then they will become your servants. Meaning you've got to give in once. You've got to let them have the upper hand. And once they have the upper hand once, they'll agree for you to be king. And once you're a king, you can do whatever you want. Right? The Malbim said that even if, you know, the smart ones among them would realize that this was just a political ploy. It was a campaign promise, right? A good campaign promise is enough to get the populism behind you. And then, once they're behind you, once you're in power, you can do whatever you want. So they said, look, just either lower the taxes now or say something nice, but don't anger them. Like, now is your opportunity to get their alliance, and then you'll see what happens. But he didn't like that. He either didn't want to lower taxes or didn't want to be nice. So instead, he asked his friends who'd grown up with him. Now, this is bad for many reasons, right? Chazal already note here that this is bad because you should always ask the people with more experience. And even though they're telling him, degrade yourself, that would have kept him power. And his friends, who are going to tell him to be full of himself, that ended up degrading him and destroying his monarchy. The other problem seems to be that it was the people who grew up with him. Right? When you're dealing with a political problem, you need a variety of voices. And it wasn't just that these were young people with inexperience. The extent that they had experience, it was the same experience he had. So there was only one voice. So vayidabru elav hayeladim asher gadlu itao leimor ko tomar lama zeh shedibru elech leimor avicha hechbir edu uleinu v'ata akelma aleinu ko tidaber aleihem k'tani avam imatni avi. So this is what you should tell them. You want me to lighten the load? It's going to be the opposite. My father, my small finger is bigger than my father's stomach, right? Which is some weird biblical phrase. But what it means is, you know, I'm going to be worse than my father. Or, as some of the Mepharshim note, that my father became king when he was 12. So, of course, you know, politically, he's limited. But I'm coming king as an adult. I can do whatever I want. I'm more established. I'm a king, the son of a king. I'm part of a dynasty. I'm an adult. Right? My father, if my father could raise taxes to that extent, even though he was really the first to create an empire, I can do whatever I want. Vata avihem mis alechem al kaved. My father put on you a heavy burden. Vani osif alulchem. So I'm just going to add, right? Which was the worst thing he possibly could have said. But the logic of his friends was basically, look, they think you're weak. If you give in now, they'll know that you're a pushover. So instead, come back. They're not going anywhere. They're not really going to rebel. So just push back harder. They'll know you're serious. And then he says, Avi saratchem bashotim. My father beat you with sticks. Vani ayasaratchem ba'akrabim. And I'm going to hit you with akrabim, which probably means thorns, which are like scorpions, right? It comes from the word akrav. But I'm going to beat you with, right? Meaning it'll be more painful. Vayavo yiravam, v'cholam el rechavam ayom ha-shlishi, kasher giber ha-melech le'mor, shuv elai bayom ha-shlishi. So then, this is all in the background. This was the 3 days of negotiations, or consultation, really. And on day three, so Yeravam comes back as the representative of the Jews, which is what they agreed on. They would come back after D3. Vayan ha-melech ra'am kasha. So Rechavam, or the king, answers. And this is the Da Mikra here says, why is he called ha-melech? Because he assumed he was king. I mean, what led to his arrogance here was that he assumed that no matter what would happen, right, they weren't serious about rebelling, he would be king. He thought he was the rightful king. So he doesn't say Vayan Rechavam, it's Vayan HaMelech. He answers as king. Vayan HaMelech Ra'am Kasha, and he answers harshly. Vayazov Ratzad Hazkenim Asher Yatzu, and he leaves the advice of the elders. Vayidaber Aleihem Katzad Yeladim, instead he responds as the children suggested, the young ones, Lemor, and he told them, Avi Hichbired Ulchem, my father was heavy, Vani Yosifa Ulchem, and I'm going to add weight to your load, right, to your yoke, literally invoking the image that they had of a yoke on an ox. Avi Saretchem Bashotim, my father beat you with sticks, Vani Ayaseretchem Bakrabim, and I'll beat you with thorns, I'll beat you with these scorpion-like thorns. Velo Shama HaMelech Elam. But then the Torah tells you, and this is, I've mentioned this before, this is the theme of much of Navi. The king did not listen to the people, not because he was stupid, but ki aita sibat meim Adonai leman hakim et dvaro asher diber Adonai biyad achiyah sheloni el Yeravam ben Nevat, because God wanted the kingdom to leave the hands of Yeravam, as he'd already said to Achiyah Shiloni, meaning it looks like this is bad.
Basically, so all this happens because God wanted it.
Exactly, right. That's what he's saying. He's saying, you know, on one hand, you might look at this and say this all happened because Rechavam was stupid and his friends were, you know, or whatever. But the truth is that there's a logic to both what the elders said and what to his friends said. His friends, meaning it didn't work out well, but there is a certain logic that if they think you look like a pushover, they'll just keep asking for things, so instead be harsh. It's not a great logic, but there is a logic to it. And the reason it works out the way it does, and Rechavam follows their advice, the Psukim are telling you that Navi always functions on two levels. There's the proximate human causes for history, and then there's the godly dimension of it, what's really going on behind the scenes. And the Navi chimes in here and tells you, don't think that the reason that Rehavam listened to this bad advice, and the reason they gave the bad advice, was because Rehavam and his friends had no political sense. They did. They understood that there was a logic to it. The reason it didn't work out was because God didn't want it to work out. So he pushed them in the direction that was going to be politically efficacious for Yeravam and disastrous for Rehavam. Vayar kol Yisrael, ki lo shama ha-melech aleihem. So all the Jews say he didn't listen. We said that we might listen if you were willing to negotiate. You're not. Vayashivu ha'am et ha-melech davar lemor. So they respond to the king, saying, ma lanu chelik b'David v'lo nachala b'ven Yishai. We have no portion in David, and we have no inheritance in Ben Yishai. Now this language, they actually steal from Shimi Ben Gera, when David fled from Avshalom. Right? When David fled from Avshalom, and he was losing his kingdom temporarily, so Shimi, on his way out, screams at him. Oh, now I'm getting an echo. Let's hope that stops. So Shimi screams and he says, "Ein lanu chelik b'David." We have no portion in David. So this is sort of a throwback to that time when David actually lost power temporarily. Now they're saying, "Well, that's exactly what's happening permanently." Now some of the Mefarshim suggest that I think this was the Malbim, but I'm not sure. I saw it last night that when they say Ben Yishai, their point is that Yishai wasn't a king. So as much as it looks like this is a dynastic leader, someone who has a right to be king, right? He's third generation king. The truth is he's only third generation king. I mean, David didn't inherit the dynasty. This is a relatively new dynasty as history goes. And therefore, you know what? You think you deserve to be king because you're Shlomo's son and Shlomo was David's son? Well, David was Yishai's son. And there used to be another kingdom. Right, there used to be Shaul and Ishbosheth. You don't necessarily get to be king. This isn't your right. And then they have the rallying cry, and they say, "Lo alecha Yisrael," right? Go back to your tents, meaning leave. Right, they're at the coronation, and they say, "Everyone, go home." Atar re'evitcha David, and see your house, David. Meaning, we don't want you. We're going to go to our home. We don't want your home. Meaning, not just your kingdom. We don't want the Beit HaMikdash either. Right, that's your bayit. We don't want your kingdom. We don't want your Beit HaMikdash. Now that's going to become important because they don't really reject the Beit HaMikdash. That seems to be more part of the anger. But Yeravam is going to play on that because Yeravam is going to be afraid that the Jews, when it comes Pesach, when it comes Sukkot, when it comes Shavuot, are going to go back to the Beit HaMikdash and realize, hey, we really do like being part of the monarchy that built the Beit HaMikdash. And that's why he ends up setting up his agalim. He ends up setting up his own mini temples with golden calves. But
don't you think it's unbelievable that one generation after the Beit HaMikdash was opened, basically? It didn't last for David's dynasty was him and Shlomo. Beit HaMikdash, one generation.
So, sort of and sort of not. And that's what the next book we're going to indicate. Yes, his complete monarchy is only two generations, but Rehavam has to keep some of the monarchy because there always needs to be a Judean king with the Beit HaMikdash. And that's sort of the compromise that we saw that God promised. But that's what's going to happen. But yes, the successful Davidic dynasty lasts for two generations, has a brief successful moment in Chizkiyahu. Yoshiyahu manages to be a tzaddik, but he doesn't manage really to unite the whole kingdom. Chizkiyahu actually unites the Malchut Yisrael a bit also and brings them back to the Beit HaMikdash. Not all of them, but some of them. But the next time it'll be successful is Mashiach. It's right. It's a very short-lived successful empire. And
I
then
when Mashiach comes, it doesn't last for only one generation.
Well, we'll see what happens then. But that's supposed to be the fulfillment of the. We hope it lasts then. You know, no one knows what it'll look like. But that's the problem that Shlomo, you know, created was that yes, his empire doesn't last as an empire. It lasts as a minor-ish kingdom. I mean, Pasuk Yud Zayin, you get it. V'nei Yisrael Yoshim Bar Yehuda, v'im loch aleihem Rechavam. And the Jews who lived in Arei Yehuda, so they do make Rechavam king. There was no question in their minds, the people of Yehuda, that they would appoint their king, Shevet, right there, the person from their Shevet, as the king. So they do appoint Rechavam as king. Now, what is fascinating is that it's not just them, as we'll see in a few psukim. It is Binyamin as well. Binyamin, who live in Yerushalayim. Your picture. Oh, you're back. Yerushalayim. So they actually stay with the Beit HaMikdash, as do the Leviim. But it's striking that Binyamin, who's from Yosef, don't go with Yeravam, who's from Ephraim. Right? The bond between Binyamin and Yehuda over the Beit HaMikdash, because they share Yerushalayim, is so strong that Binyamin actually stays with Yehuda, which is actually surprising. The Midrashim suggest that this is, at some level, it's a thank you for the fact that Yehuda saved Binyamin from Yosef, right, in next week's Parsha, right? The Yehuda stands up, right, because, you know, Yehuda saves Binyamin, right? Yosef is trying to keep him as a slave, right, the viceroy, and Binyamin is, you know, Yehuda puts his life on the line for Binyamin. And that sort of plays out, that Binyamin actually switches allegiance from Yosef to Yehuda, because sort of a Mida, you know, whatever, a Mida Keneged Mida reward for Yehuda having put his life on the line for Binyamin against Yosef all those many years ago. Now, Rechavam then makes a bigger mistake. He tries to either make amends or force them to pay taxes. It's not clear, but he sends the chief tax collector under Shlomo. Vayishlach ha-melech Rechavam and adoram asher ha-lamas. Right, so they send the chief tax collector. Now the Mefarshim divide that either he's sending him to negotiate or he's sending them to force them to pay taxes. But he apparently didn't realize how angry they were about the taxes, because you don't send the tax collector if you realize how bad it is. Vayigamuchol Yisrael bo evin vayamot. So they stone him to death, and he dies. And when he dies, Rechavam realizes how serious they are, how dangerous it is. Vamelech Rechavam hitametz alot b'merkava lanus Yerushalayim. So he gets in his chariot and runs back to Yerushalayim and realizes that this is serious. Vayivshu Yisrael b'veit David ad yayom hazeh. And the Jews.
Where did he send him to collect taxes? To eat.
He sent it back to the Jews who had just rejected him as king. He sends them to Ephraim, either to negotiate or to collect taxes. But either way, he's the tax collector, and that doesn't work out well. They kill him.
Where does he say that he sent him to Ephraim?
Well, he sends it to, that's because that's who he's talking to, right? He sends it back to the Jews in Ephraim, and he sends them to Shechem, to where they were all collected. Like in the middle of this, you know, as everyone's sort of leaving this coronation thing, he sends his tax collector to try to either negotiate or force them to listen to him, but they stone him. They kill him. And Rechavam realizes that this is a full-out rebellion, so he flees, and what becomes known as Malchut Yisrael, the kingdom of the 10 tribes, they rebel against David until today. Now the psukim vayif she'u, right, that they sin against him, does imply that at some level David is still the rightful king, right? And even with the nevuah, at some level, this is a crime against the rightful king. Vayhi chishma kol Yisrael kishav Yeravam. So now they're rebelling, and Yeravam, they hear Yeravam, who's been the symbol of the rebellion, has returned. Vayishlechu vayikru oto elayida vayimlicho oto al kol Yisrael. So they call him and they appoint him as king, which fulfills Achiyah Shiloni's nevuah. Lo aya acharei Beit David zulati shevet Yehuda levado, and only Yehuda, and then we'll see later Binyamin, follow Rechavam. Vayevo Rechavam Yerushalayim. So Rechavam returns to Yerushalayim. Vayekel kol Beit Yehuda vet Shevet Binyamin. And now Yehuda and Binyamin come together, and he musters a force to quash the rebellion. So he gets together Me'au Shmonim Elef Bachur Osei Melchama, 180,000 soldiers. which is a massive force to quash the rebellion. To fight against the Jews, to bring back the kingdom, a full-out civil war. But then, at that point, Shemaya the Navi gets a nivuah. And he says, Emor Rechavam ben Shlomo, tell Rechavam, Melech Yehuda, that he's the king of Yehuda. Ved kol beit Yehuda uvinamin v'yetar am lemor. Tell the king of Yehuda, right, which is the first time he defines him as such, that he's not Melech Yisrael anymore. He's only Melech Yehuda. He's the king just of his section. So get him. And... What?
We didn't hear you, cut out.
Okay, so he says, can you hear me now?
Shmaya, who is Shmaya?
Okay, so Shmaya is a new Navi. So he's a Navi, apparently, in among the Jews. So he sends a message to Shmaya. He says, tell Rechavam Melech Yehuda. And this is, I think, the first time he's called Melech Yehuda, and he's only the king of Yehuda.
Right.
Tell him, and Beit Yehuda and Vinyamin, and all those people, that Ko Amar Adonai, Lo Ta'alu, Velo Tilachamun Achechem Bnei Yisrael, Shuvu Ish Leveito, don't fight the Jews, Ki Meitini Adavar Hazeh, because this rebellion is from me. And he listens to him. Right? So Rechavam, and this is to Rechavam's credit, that once he hears the Nevuah, he hears an explicit Nevuah, that this rebellion is meant to be, that he's not meant to be the king of all Israel, he backs down and he doesn't fight. And that's sort of the end of this unit. I guess we'll stop there if you have to finish it soon. It's not worth starting the Rechavam. But the Yeravam part of it, but this is where they really split, and this is the beginning of what is now the next 400 years. For the next 400 years, these two kingdoms function independently. There are times, once for a little bit, they hate each other, but at different points they end up working together because once the emotions. Calm down. So there are times when they join together to fight against common enemies. There will be times eventually in the time of Chizkiyahu where he calls to everybody. The Malchut Yisrael is very sporadic. There is no dynasty. In Malchut Yisrael, there will be kings, but very few of them will last for more than one or two generations. They'll constantly be sinning and constantly being rejected, and a new king will arise. That's not true in Malchut Yehuda. To the extent that Malchut Yehuda exists, it exists as a dynasty, and it is a son, ben achar ben, a son after son dynasty until the end, until Churban HaBayit, 400 plus years later. Malchut Yisrael is just this other kingdom with a bunch of different kings. Again, eventually they work together. Malchut Yisrael will go into Galut first, right? They will be kicked out by Ashur, by Sancheiriv, significantly before Malchut Yehuda. Malchut Yehuda will last all the way until the Churban HaBayit, which is as God said, that as long as there's a Beit HaMikdash, there'll be a Malchut Yehuda. And once there isn't a Beit HaMikdash and there's no Malchut Yehuda, they die together, so to speak. But this is the end of, as you said, this is the end of the real dynasty of Shlomo, David and Shlomo as an emperor, as a king of a unified Israel. He continues as a significant power over Yehudah and Binyamin and the Beit HaMikdash, because the Beit HaMikdash always needs a Davidic king to exist, but the second kingdom divides, which takes with it the majority of the Jewish people. And that's where sort of this unit ends up in the Dan Mikra. They don't divide it by the Perek, right? Sometimes the Prakim were divided by the Christians. So often, the logic of the division of Perek is not the same as Chazal's division. Chazal have a parsha break here because the story of Rechavam is one story, and then we switch focus to Yeravam. So I guess we'll just leave it since you said you have half an hour. So that's half an hour now. So we'll end there. Okay.